From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. A 5.9 magnitude earthquake centered in Lake Clark National Park shook the Kenai Peninsula and South Central Alaska at about 1:40 p.m. today. The epicenter of the quake was about 7 miles northwest of Mount Iliamna across Cook Inlet from Nanilchik. That's according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Alex Farrell, a scientific developer with the Alaska Earthquake Center in Fairbanks, said this quake is moderate by the center's standards.
It's not the largest earthquake of the year, but it is definitely significant.
Farrell says there are no reports of damage so far. She says that's likely because the earthquake was 95 miles deep and far from a population center. For contrast, the 2018 Anchorage earthquake was less than 30 miles deep. Farrell says a tsunami is not expected. Federal government sent so much COVID money to Alaska last year that it increased federal funds to state government by nearly a third. That's one of the findings of a report from the Pew Charitable Trust. Nationally, the report says COVID spending amounted to 25% of all federal grants to states in 2020. That's second only to Medicaid, the health insurance program for the poor. Rebecca Thies is one of the authors.
I think it's really important context for states to know just how much of their grant funding is related to COVID or to Medicaid or to other programs.
For the state of Alaska, COVID dollars in 2020 were nearly equal to the state's allotment of federal Medicaid spending, which was about $1.5 billion. Most of the pandemic spending in the report is from the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. States couldn't use CARES Act funds for items that were already in their budgets or unrelated to the pandemic. Thies says that created some inflexibility for states.
There were specific prescriptions that the CARES Act could be used for, and that didn't allow states to kind of do whatever they want with it or plug whatever holes they wanted with it.
The Pew report does not cover the major COVID relief bill Congress passed in 2021, the American Rescue Plan Act. That gave states more leeway. States, for instance, can use ARPA money to make up for lost revenues. The budget Governor Mike Dunleavy announced last week relies on $375 million in unrestricted federal COVID funds. The Delta Junction man who's accused of threatening to kill Alaska's two U.S. senators now wants to change the not guilty plea he entered last month. J. Allen Johnson's attorney filed a notice of intent to change plea on Friday with the U.S. District Court for Alaska. Johnson pleaded not guilty back on November 22nd to 6 federal charges related to voicemail messages he allegedly called into the offices of both Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan earlier this year. Federal prosecutors say the 65-year-old Johnson threatened, among other things, to kill Murkowski and destroy her property, apparently because he disagreed with her politics, especially her criticism of former President Donald Trump. Johnson also threatened Sullivan. The 65-year-old Johnson has been held at Fairbanks Correctional Center since federal officers arrested him on October 4th. Alaska's vulnerability to a surge of Omicron cases is about average compared with other states. That's according to Alaska's top epidemiologist, Dr. Joe McLaughlin. While Alaska's overall COVID vaccination rate is lower than other states, its rate of booster doses administered and the percentage of people that have some immunity from previous infection is higher. McLaughlin says the low vaccination rate is Alaska's biggest risk factor for a surge of the highly contagious Omicron variant.
The first thing we need to improve on is increasing the proportion of our population that has had their primary vaccine series. And this is how we can cut hospitalization and death rates most dramatically. And then secondly, we need to get people boosted.
Alaska has detected only one case of the Omicron variant so far, and case rates haven't shown signs of another surge. But health officials say that due to a two-week sequencing delay, it's likely that there are many more Omicron cases spreading in the state. McLaughlin says that overall, Alaska's in a better place this year than the same time last year, thanks to vaccines. He says he'll be hosting a holiday gathering this year, but it will be small, and he'll have a testing requirement.
So these over-the-counter tests are great. They're, you can get them in some stores here in Alaska. And if you test everybody immediately before the gathering, that is going to be a really good way to mitigate or decrease the risk of transmission at a holiday gathering.
He says the health department is working to distribute rapid take-home tests to local health departments around the state. The process has been slowed by a shortage of test kits, but McLaughlin says most community health centers in Alaska are distributing them. Alaska Police Standards Council unanimously elected an advocate for domestic violence and sexual assault victims from King Salmon as the new chair of the council this month. It's a move that deviates from the norm, where a police chief or commissioner is elected to that position. As KDLG's Tyler Thompson reports, Rebecca Hammond is the first person without a law enforcement background to chair the council in decades.
The Alaska Police Standards Council sets and enforces standards for employment, training, certification, and retention of law enforcement officials across the state. It also investigates potential misconduct by law enforcement that could lead to decertification. Rebecca Hammond is a village and legal advocate in King Salmon for Safe Bristol Bay, a shelter prevention and advocacy agency for domestic violence and sexual assault victims. She replaces retired Anchorage Police Chief Justin Dahl as the council's chair. Hammond was appointed by Dahl to serve as the vice chair of the council before his retirement.
Well, it's a little bit shocking to me. It gives me sort of this out-of-body feeling like, what? It's me that is the chair of this thing. But on the other hand, I do feel confident about the role because I've served on this board so long, and I understand a lot of our goals and just the overall direction that the board is trying to go.
The council consists of 13 people who are appointed by the governor. 9 of those seats go to people with backgrounds in law enforcement. The other 4 members represent the public, and 2 of them are from smaller communities. Before she joined the council, Hammond says she had worked on several cases in the Naknek area with former state legislator Chuck Kopp, who was a police officer in Bristol Bay at that time.
And that was right during the time of Governor Parnell, and he was putting together the Choose Respect campaign. And he apparently, in conversation with Chuck Kopp, had told him that he was interested in having someone serve on the council that did not necessarily have a police background and who worked with victims specifically.
According to Hammond, Kopp floated the idea of joining as a member of the public. She applied and was appointed by former Governor Sean Parnell in 2011.
Often those public seats were filled by retired police officers or people that had worked in the field of police work over their careers. So there's a few of us now that are public members that are not in police work. We have a fresh outlook. We're not part of that hierarchy, and we can look at how we feel about certain problems in the police world in a more unbiased view.
Hammond's background has motivated much of her work with the council over the years. She's advocated for strict accountability in cases where an officer has abused their power to have unethical contact with victims and victims' families.
Particularly issues that women face in our communities. I have come down with a very high level of no tolerance toward cases where someone in uniform has used their influence or their access to a victim's information or anything about her situation or his situation to do anything unethical. Those victims are the people that I feel like it's my role to stand up for them all.
Hammond has cracked down on these cases as a member of the council, but she's also advocated for second chances when officers have made minor mistakes that violate the council's regulations. Hammond says some of those mistakes could be due to a lack of mental health resources for law enforcement. She says the state lacks enough of those resources.
Because it is such a stressful and complex job, it causes a lot of pressure on the person. And some of these errors and, you know, poor judgment can be a result of mental health issues. And those are the types of things that I'd like to look at as another side of the equation.
Hammond has also worked with the council to improve training resources for law enforcement. Specifically, she's advocated for support in smaller rural communities. She says bigger departments have more capacity to train and retain officers.
Training for our officers can be such a giant chunk of our budget in a small community, whereas some of these large communities, they can train multiple officers out of a much bigger budget. And so a lot of times I have been arguing for resources for our smaller communities so that our officers out in these small communities could receive the same quality of training as officers in our bigger departments.
As Hammond steps into a leadership role with the council, Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety Leon Morgan will serve as vice chair. Morgan says Hammond's longevity on the board and her background speaks to her credibility.
She was unanimously selected to be the chair, and I think that speaks for itself. I think it's a well-deserved appointment, and at least from my perspective, it's very important to have that a community voice on the board and to help drive decisions and directions for law enforcement as a whole, because we serve our own communities.
Hammond and Morgan were elected to their new roles at a council meeting earlier this month. The Alaska Police Standards Council meets at least twice a year, depending on its caseload. Those meetings are open to the public. The council's next meeting is set for May 5th, 2022. In Dillingham, I'm Tyler Thompson.
At least a half dozen dogs and one person were accidentally caught in traps in Alaska last winter. At least one of those accidents killed a dog. That's according to a report from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, a nonprofit that advocates for more trapping restrictions. The report, called Map the Trap, relied on dozens of submissions from the public about trap encounters. Several described close encounters with traps near trails and roadways, and one man said he was pulled off his motorbike after a snare caught his foot on a trail in the Mat-Su. Alaska Wildlife Alliance Director Nicole Schmidt says the organization realized there was a need to compile anecdotal evidence about trap encounters earlier this year.
There's no centralized database for trap encounters, be it through ADF&G or state troopers or wildlife troopers. Each agency, if they do track it, is tracking it within their own bubble of authority. And so the goal with this project was to really understand the scope of trap encounter issues.
Schmidt says the group hopes to continue the Map the Trap project next year and is asking the public to submit their reports to akwildlife.org. And finally, the National Weather Service forecast tonight for the Juneau area, mostly clear, lows around 20 degrees. Northeast winds to 15 miles per hour. With those mostly clear skies, tonight's aurora forecast from the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska Fairbanks is a 4, active. Auroral activity will be active, weather permitting. Active auroral displays will be visible overhead from Utqiagvik to Anchorage and Juneau. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, December 21st, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.